Today on Sticks In, looking back a little bit at the first round of the NCAA tournament. We had 8 games, all chalk, but we'll spend a couple minutes kind of looking at that, the results and the weekend at large. And then we'll talk about, there's a couple results of the NCAA tournament that are not chalk that should be getting some of your attention. We'll talk about those too. And we will also look at the media All-American team, the Inside Lacrosse Media All-American team, kind of give you the way I voted for them and talk about how the teams actually shook out. So we'll cover all of that. And then just a couple minutes on street lacrosse. PLL had another street lacrosse event over the weekend in New York City. So we will talk briefly about that. If you are enjoying the podcast, please do leave a like, subscribe, all that good stuff. Thank you again for coming back. Let's do it. Welcome back to Sticks In. My name is Dan Arestia. I'm glad you're here. The NCAA tournament is underway in the least exciting way possible. I don't mean to start on a sour note. We had 4 games on Saturday. The closest of those games was Denver beating Michigan 16-11, and it wasn't even that close. Denver, I believe, was up 10-2 at one point. You know, credit to Michigan, I guess, for battling back, making it a fight. I think they got within 3 or 4 goals, but it never got to the point where, as you were watching, it felt like Denver might not win the game. Like, they just set the tone early, and they were all over Michigan. So that was the closest score of the weekend, I believe, the 5-goal spread of 16-11 in Denver-Michigan. The other games over the weekend, UVA beat St. Joe 17-11, Duke beat Utah 19-7, and Maryland beat Princeton 16-8. It was kind of a tone setter for the weekend because, you know, coming into the weekend, I feel like we all had our little underdogs that we loved. There were some people on the St. Joe's train that can they take it to a UVA team that's been down for a month or whatever. There was Michigan who rolled through the Big Ten tournament and just stomped Penn State. Michigan was -1.5, was a favorite. Again, trash value at plus money, but -1.5 on the road in a sold-out Peter Barton. I hope you took Denver +1.5 at trash value and just took the free money. But, you know, St. Joe's was a popular pick against UVA. I don't think anybody really had Utah beating Duke. I think people kind of, that scoreline was probably where people had it. But a lot of people had Princeton beating Maryland. There are some brackets out there with Princeton in the Final Four, Princeton in the title game, because they've been so good. Their defense has been great. Their offense is cooking. They've been facing off well. They have Gianfricaro in net, who's been great. And Maryland was all over them. And I have been driving the bus of Maryland's offense stinks. Doesn't have the playmakers. Doesn't have the Dodgers. They were, my kind of forecast for that game was, all right, Maryland's going to need to get some, you know, on man up, on ride backs, you know, in transition, you know, steal those goals in the margins to win the game. They put up 16 goals. They didn't need anything from me, obviously. Tillman knows better than I do. But, man, I did not have 16-8 Maryland coming. I thought Maryland had a chance to win the game. I wasn't one of these people where it was like, you know, the whole world was on Princeton. Princeton, again, that was a favorite in that game, too. Maryland was an underdog at home. But, you know, Princeton was a popular pick. I could see the rationale for the pick. I think the minority of people were probably taking Maryland. I don't think anybody saw that kind of score line coming. I think if people were taking Maryland to win, they were probably looking for Maryland to win like 9-7, you know, that style. Not 16-8, that's for sure. I thought Spanos was exceptional. I thought he was really good. You know, my thinking coming in, and I had said it was, other than Irksa and Spanos, I don't know if Maryland really has any big-time Dodgers. And Spanos at attack, I think, really, really made a difference in that game. So, you know, credit to Maryland. They advance. They were the last game on Saturday. And I think that was kind of the one, as you got through the day and the games were all pretty mediocre to watch, Not because the play was bad, just because, you know, there weren't close games, man. It's all chalk and blowouts. Like, it's not fun. I think people were kind of hoping that Maryland-Princeton would be the one, be like, well, this one won't be chalk, because everyone knows Princeton's got the horses. And then it was a blowout early. Even that game. Blowout early, seeded team, they're winning, see ya. So surely those four games of chalk and blowouts wouldn't carry into Sunday, right? Well, the blowout part maybe didn't. The chalk sure did. Hopkins beats Lehigh 13-10, although that game was better. It wasn't like a super clean, like sexy kind of game or anything, but, you know, I think Lehigh held a 9-8 lead, I believe, in that game in the second half, third quarter, maybe even a fourth quarter, 9-8 lead. So Lehigh was battling. They were in it. They had won six straight. Like, if you come through the Patriot League, you've seen some stuff. You've been through it. Like, it does not, to emerge from the Patriot League takes a lot. So if somebody, the Patriot League winner is always going to give somebody a game. They're not bowing out easy. I thought they battled. I thought they had a chance to win that game, but, you know, Hopkins just kind of pulled away late. I will toot my own horn and I say I thought the difference in that game might end up being matchups that Hopkins has in the midfield. And I think that was a place where Hopkins really did lean on their guys. Collison in particular. Peschko had a couple nice goals, but I thought Collison would be able to be a force in that game, and I think he was. So Hopkins gets that 13-10 win. Georgetown beats Penn State 12-9. Notre Dame takes care of business, really, against Albany 14-9. And then Cuse puts up the 20 spot and beats Towson 20-15. I don't think it was as close as 20-15. Cuse was rolling in the second half. It looked like they could have gone harder, and they took their foot off the gas in the fourth quarter and just kind of, you know, just took the 80 seconds at a time, and that was that, stopped going. So I think you put up 20 on a team like Towson that's got a hell of a defense, and that tells you what you need to know about Cuse. So look, Penn State, I think, had to deal with the another crease call that maybe didn't go their way, which, I mean, I feel for you Nittany Lions fans. It's a curse. I don't know what to tell you. Albany put up some fight against Notre Dame, as you thought they would. Notre Dame, though, again, it's just a game where they didn't really feel like they weren't in control. I said on social, I thought the weekend wasn't that fun. I stand by it. I don't think those games were all that fun for the first round. All chalk, for the most part. The score lines were all kind of, even if it wasn't a blowout, a lot of these games never really felt like they were in doubt. Hopkins-Lehigh might be the exception. A few people have said, all chalk, well, that's good because it means the quarterfinals are going to be great. To that, I would say we haven't had all chalk in the first round for 20 years, and we've had plenty of great quarterfinal games. You don't need to have all chalk to have great quarterfinals. If you think it's going to somehow be better, I don't think it can be any more than marginally better. It's not like we've been waiting for like this moment to have these great quarterfinal games. We have them anyway. A round without chalk is always a more exciting round. A first round with upsets is way more fun than a first round without them. I kind of wish Lehigh had pulled it off, because I feel like they had the best chance for no other real reason there. Again, Penn State, I think they had a chance to win that game. Crease call kind of hurt them late. Albany's battle, admirable. Again, there's bright young stars in that team with kids like Richmond and Doherty and all that, but it never really felt like they were going to win that game to me. It felt like Notre Dame, even if the score line wasn't lopsided, Notre Dame just felt like they were in control the whole time. Towson and Cuse did have a great back and forth for a while, but, you know, as that game was going, you know, it's like 8-8 or 9-9, whatever, they're racing up and down, it's still a first half. It was Cuse's style of game to play. Cuse was playing the game they wanted to play. And they would have been happy to just keep going like that. You know, Towson's still in it on the scoreboard, but that pace, that tempo, that kind of scoring, that style of game, that's 100% the Cuse game plan. And they'll play that game against anybody and probably win it against anybody. So it would have been surprising for me to see Towson pull that one out. Eventually, Cuse went on the kind of run you expect them to go on in that game. They scored like 8 goals and it felt like about 10 seconds. And they just kind of put Towson away with this heavyweight punch of a run, and that was it. Other kind of cool stuff from the weekend, I thought Peyton Cormier sent quite a love letter to the PLL coaches who did not draft him. He did go undrafted on Tuesday night, and then he goes out against St. Joe's over the weekend and scores 8 goals. Sets a UVA record, breaks Mac O'Keefe's career goal record in the same game. I had kind of talked to a few folks around UVA during the week as I was trying to chase down who was claiming him. I wanted to know where he was going to wind up. There was no way he was just going to sit out there. If nobody had claimed him, the only reason would be he told the universe he has no interest in playing field lacrosse and he's just spending summers in Canada. Otherwise, somebody has to claim him. So I was trying to figure out who was claiming him as the news was coming and all that, kind of started figuring it out. But in talking to some folks around UVA, the words people used to describe him were things like pissed off, revenge, like he was gonna go out and statement game it up kind of thing. So, ultimately, I think we'll see what Cormier's availability is like all summer. If he's around for a full summer of field and he went undrafted, that is a mistake. I'll say it now. I will say this, and it did occur to me after the draft, and it's funny, it never occurs to me every year until it actually happens, but each of the past few years, I'm sure if you're a regular fan of a team, you know, the Canadian rookies who get drafted sometimes miss some time at the start of the year because they are figuring out travel visas, like work. It's an employment. You're now a pro athlete. It's your job of a travel visa, and getting those sorted out takes time. So sometimes the Canadian rookies are like a little bit late to the party and can't really play games and travel safely until a couple weeks in. Maybe a team got scared off by that, didn't want to use a pick in a draft that deep on a guy who wasn't going to be around for the first couple of weeks as the visa stuff got figured out. I don't know if that's going to happen again this year. I was just trying to come up with the reason in my brain why he went undrafted. That was the best one I think I could come up with. Other than he's not playing, but it seems like he's playing because he got claimed. So, Cormier going undrafted, surprising. I think the response in the quarterfinals or in the first round, less than surprising. I'll be going out to Hempstead, out to Hofstra for the quarters. I hope we get some better games, but you know, on the whole, 8 blowouts, or maybe not 8 blowouts, but at a minimum 8 chalk games that only one of them ever felt like it was maybe in doubt. Kind of a meh way to start the weekend. Kind of blah. Not a huge lover of that. I think the matchups in Hempstead are good. It's interesting to me that Cuse is going to Baltimore and not New York, not Long Island. I thought Cuse would be in Long Island. I guess that's just how the seeds went and how the tournament went, but I don't know. For Duke and everybody to be coming up here and then Cuse to be going to, I don't know. I don't have the brain for this kind of thing. I don't have the know-how for this kind of thing. It's just how the seed shook out, whatever. But I thought Cuse, had they advanced, made more sense to be in a Hempstead bracket. But I guess that's just the seeding at work. Some other results from the weekend that are noteworthy that you need to know about. St. John Fisher is on one right now. If you hate the chalk and you hate the blowouts and you want absolute mayhem and chaos, take yourself down to the D3 tournament, man, because it's happening down there. It's nuts down there. It's nuts. St. John Fisher beat Wesleyan, followed that up with a win over St. Lawrence, and all of a sudden they are in the Elite Eight of the D3 tournament. Wesleyan was in the top 10, I think, for some of the year. St. Lawrence basically spent the entire year in the top 10, top 5 even. And St. John Fisher, who in the USA Laxbag polls that I'm part of, I don't even know if we had them in the also considered portion of the poll once all season. It is an insane upset run that they're on. They are an awesome underdog story. It's the NCAA tournament right now, man. It's like, this is the kind of stuff that you love, that people should take notice of. This is the Cinderella team knocking off some heavyweights and trying to make a spectacular run through the postseason. Up next for them is Tufts. So it'll take another legendary game, or at least something that Tufts isn't ready for. St. John Fisher runs some zone. They run kind of, you know, a different defensive scheme than teams have seen before. And if you're not ready for it, you can't just figure it out on the fly. So, I think if they could kind of, again, throw these punches at people that they aren't ready for, with, you know, a unusual scheme of a zone or some offensive looks that teams haven't seen before, that kind of stuff, that's their ticket. That's how they've won 2 games. I don't know if that's going to be enough to beat Tufts. Tufts is pretty good. It'll take another legendary game. On paper, St. John Fisher has no shot. but they don't play the games on paper. So find your way to watching a little bit of St. John Fisher and Tufts. See if those boys can keep the magic going. In D2, biggest result of the weekend was Lenoir Rhyne beat Limestone. Limestone has been the top team in D2 for most of the year, really. They didn't take their first loss until, I believe, in March or something like that. Like Lemoyne a year ago. Lemoyne was cruising, crushed everybody in the regular season, lost in the playoffs. I don't remember if that was this round or if it wasn't until the Elite Eight, but Lemoyne, I don't think, made the Final Four last year. I got to go back and look exactly when they lost. But LRU gets a 15-13 win over Limestone. That is huge for LRU. They are the defending champ. They are alive to defend their crown. I think the real test now is this weekend. They have to get through Tampa in the semis. And Tampa's form right now is insane. Tampa just beat Lewis 20-3. Tampa's been on a heater since mid-March. They're just crushing people. They are the one seed. I think, you know, it's if you had to have me pick a favorite for the whole thing right now, it would probably be Tampa. But this game should be a hell of a fight. That LRU team is real good. They have a defenseman named Victor Powell who's you know, a guy who might be a fringe guy to be a pro. He's an exceptional defenseman. I think whoever comes out of this LRU-Tampa game will ultimately be, I don't know about a heavy favorite, but a solid favorite over either Adelphi or St. Anselm out of the North. But the D2 tournament has been really good. Despite the fact that the South bracket was whack, the D2 tournament has been good. All right, let's do the thing that makes everyone angry. Let's do the craziness. The Inside Lacrosse Media All-Americans. These came out Sunday night, I think at halftime or sometime during the Syracuse-Towson game. I think they were released. A few notes from Inside Lacrosse before getting into it. Brennan O'Neill was first team on every ballot except three. I believe there's something like 20-something ballots for this. Same thing is true of Michigan's short stick D-mid Bo Pettersson, first team on all but three ballots. Evan Plunkett got more votes than anybody else in the midfield. Will Coletti, first team on all but two ballots. Liam Entman, first team on all except two ballots. For Entman in particular, I am not sure what the case is for him to be second team and not first team. I don't know. I guess unless we get the two voters who had it that way, it'll be hard to figure that out, but they have to get out there and explain it. Otherwise, we'll never know. We'll just go through it here. I'll give you kind of the teams, the winners isn't the right word, the selections for first team, second team, etc. by position. Then I'll give you who I had in those spots. So we'll go team by team here. The first team attack, the final ballot was Brennan O'Neill, Matt Brandau, CJ Kirst. My vote was Brennan O'Neill, Matt Brandau, Connor Schellenberger. Not easy. It's interesting because there's really five or six guys who are all first teamers. And there is also kind of a decent case against all of them. For Brandau and Kirst, you can say, well, you didn't make the tournament. If you were first team All-American, you were so good, how come your team didn't even make the tournament? If you're Brennan O'Neill, well, you had some of those quiet games. You had some of those rough stretches in the year. I don't know. Pat Cavanaugh, oh, well, your points aren't quite where all these other guys are. Schellenberger, well, UVA had that rough stretch at the end of the year. They lost four straight where he was, you know, maybe not 100%, but wasn't killing people. I'm not trying to say these are all legitimate. I'm saying you're splitting hairs, and then you're taking the hair that you split and splitting it again. That's how this always goes with first-team attack. I never just go by points. You really can't. It's if you sort by points and just list players, it's the laziest possible way to do this. It means it either signals that you haven't actually watched any games or you haven't at all considered the team dynamics or what else is going on in the scenario that is outside of the fact that guys had this many points or that many points. Brandau, he did lead the nation in points per game and all that. For me, that's not why he's here. He's here because he did that. Had all those points, was the leader of the nation with maybe his best season ever and with a fraction of the expected supporting cast. All of that with no Brad Sharp, no Chris Lyons, no Leo Johnson, far and away when Yale walks on the field, everyone's like, stop 41 and you can handle them. And nobody can stop 41. He was really just exceptionally dominant in the face of some very difficult odds. A team that was hurt, when their face-off unit went down, they weren't getting the ball as much. His production just does not dip. It did not change. So I think Brando had to be a first-teamer. Brennan, I don't think anything changes. I don't think anyone else, I should say, changes a game quite like he does. He tore up everybody this year. He had a bad game against Cuse in the Dome, but let's be honest, he set that right with 6 points against them in the ACC tournament. Only Notre Dame could handle Brennan, and Brendan Lavelle, it turns out, is the only one who could handle Brennan all year. And so those two, O'Neal and Brando, were the first one in. Third took some time for me. In the end, I landed on Schellenberger. And this is where I started. I guess I started doing that, and sometimes I hate it, but doing like the who's the most valuable to their team kind of thinking. I think if you take Schellenberger away from UVA and you wonder how they're doing, the drop-off you expect to see is much more profound than if you take any of these other guys off their teams. The only other player on UVA with 20 assists is McCabe Millen. He's a freshman. Their midfield is really down this year. At attack, you know, it's Cormier, who is not the QB type, and Millen. I don't know if there's an offense that hinges on one player quite as much as UVA's does with Schellenberger being out there, save maybe Yale and Matt Brando. So because of his value and his importance to that team and their success, I have, and obviously the caliber of player he is, I put Schellenberger on the first team. I will not at all fight anybody who says I did that wrong. I'm not going to, you know, I know USA Laxmag does 4 All-Americans. I think that's cheating this year. You got to take a stand. Pick those 3, leave somebody out. You got to do it. At midfield, the final ballot was Evan Plunkett, Shane Knobloch, and Mikey Weishaar. My vote was Evan Plunkett, Shane Knobloch, and Jake Stevens. Noticeably absent here, and I will say absent everywhere, is Graham Bundy. I was in a conundrum here, and I think maybe other voters might have been too, but Bundy's been a midfielder his whole career where he's very much a first-team All-American midfielder, but he's playing attack this year. He's played attack basically the whole year, so you have to kind of put him in attack. And as an attackman, does he stack up with all these other attack guys? He's definitely below those first team guys. We'll get to second team. He's probably below them, you know. So, you know, spoiler alert here, but he's not on the list anywhere. He's not even honorable mention. It's a stunner to see Graham Bundy not even as an honorable mention. But, you know, that's just the way the year went, I guess. The difference between my ballot and the final team is I have Jake Stevens first team. Final ballot has him as a second teamer. This is another where if you sort by stats, he's never going to be at the top of the list. But his numbers in one particular category will never be a thing that blow you away. But his numbers across a lot of categories will. And how much he does for Cuse definitely does. I think a player like him, it's so valuable. And sometimes it's hard to appreciate until he's not there anymore. Because when if he's ever out of the lineup, like if he was to get hurt and miss a game, it would take 2 or 3 guys at least, to replace just him by himself. That's how much he does. So I have Stevens as a first teamer there. It was not easy to drop Mikey Weishaar. He had a great year, but I have Stevens as a first teamer. Face off, the final ballot was Will Colletti. My vote would be Will Colletti. Will Colletti was unanimous at midseason. It was easy then. I thought it was still fairly easy now. I'm not sure the argument for other guys. Colletti was the best in the country this year to me, I think by a pretty decent margin. Short stick D. Mitty. The final ballot was Ben Ramsey and Bo Pettersson on the first team. My vote was Ben Ramsey and Bo Pettersson on the first team. Pretty easy here too to me. Short stick D. Mitty's had a nice year. I think these two were the clear two best, but there's a lot of really good SSDMs out there. Both of these guys, from a matchup standpoint, I look at and I see two guys who you put out there as shorties and you can expect the polls to not slide to them. And I think that's a very high honor for a short stick, for the polls behind you to trust you and know you enough to not expect to have to slide to help, because Ramsey and Pettersson win matchups. The old adage for defenders is, oh, well, if you don't hear their name a lot, it means they're doing well, you know? If you don't hear their name, it means they're never screwing up. I think these guys are exceptions to the rule, because when you watch their games, you hear their names a ton, but it's for these ridiculously good plays that they make, either as cover guys or off the ground or whatever, running D to O. So Ramsey and Pedersen were the first teamers for me. LSM, the first teamer is Jake Pussano. My vote was Jake Pussano. Easy pick here. Pound for pound, I don't know if there's a player in America who impacts the game more. He touches just so many areas of the field, and it really is unique. Back before the season, I gave him a shot at the McLaughlin Award, the best midfielder in the country, because Joel White won it. I think Pussano should be up for it. If you think of him as an LSM and not a close defender, it's hard because he plays every position on the field. I don't know what position you play him as, but if you think of him as a midfielder, as an LSM, I think he should be up for the McLaughlin Award. I think he's been that impactful. He's been that good. So first teamer is Jake Pussano. The defense, the final team was Ajax Zapatello, Brendan Lavelle, and Scott Smith. My vote was Ajax Zapatello, Brendan Lavelle, and Cole Kastner. So a little different there, too. Only little bits of differences here. Zapatello is the only unanimous pick of the year. The only part of that might be surprising, but the unanimous shouldn't be. I think he's basically a lock for the Schmeiser at this point. I think if it was me, it would come down to him and Lavelle. Lavella's had an incredible season. He's basically one of the only guys in the country to lock up Brennan O'Neill this year. I think he and Emmett Carroll were the two biggest keys to that Penn win over Duke. You go back and watch these games, watch Lavelle play, see how often his man is dodging and the Dodger actually gets to the spot in the field he's trying to get to. It's very rare. It's very rare that somebody takes a run at Lavelle and gets where they're trying to go. Forget like scores a goal, whatever. Just gets where they're trying to go. He really was good this year, and he sees a lot. I mean, he was doing that to Brandow. He has a lot of tough matchups, particularly in the Ivy. So I have Kastner third as a first-teamer here. I thought he was better than Scott Smith this year. Kastner, I think, is better off the ground. I think he impacts game more in spots like on the ride where he can bump up to the midfield, that kind of thing. So I gave Kastner the first-team spot ahead of Scott Smith. The goalie spot, my vote was Liam Enemann. The final vote was Liam Enemann. I think this should have been unanimous. I'm surprised it isn't. At midseason, I did have Emmett Carroll here, but Enemann in the second half is playing a different game than everyone else. He has a legitimate chance. I really believe this. He has a legitimate chance to win the Tuwaritin as a goalie. I can't imagine not having him on the first team. Second teamers. Let's do the second teamers. Attack. The final ballot was Connor Schellenberger, Pat Cavanaugh, TJ Malone. My ballot was CJ Kerst, Pat Cavanaugh, TJ Malone. So I flopped Kerst and Schellenberger from where the ballot actually wound up. Second team attack is where you're going to go for the maximum number of names to make yourself angry. Like if you want to doom scroll the All-American team, go straight for that second team attack and get yourself pissed. All three of these guys are first team good. There's only three spots, though, so this is where we are. I don't make the rules. Kerst is the guy who made first team on the ballot. I think of all these guys, of this, even this whole group of six of them, if you really think about it, the offense that's most likely to be okay if you take one of them away from it is Cornell's with losing CJ. With Michael Long there, with Goldstein and Firth, even though they're freshmen, the seasons that they had were special. You know, with Kelleher there, the points and the scoring were distributed really widely on that team. Again, I think Michael Long is a superstar. I think if you took Cornell, if you took CJ Kerst away, Cornell would be okay. They're not going to be as good. CJ Kerst, I think, could have been a Tuwaritin finalist, but I think the loss there is the easiest to withstand compared to losing Schellenberger, Brandow, you know, Brennan, Pat Cavanaugh, TJ Malone. So I don't think it's, I mean, I'm not trying to sit here and say it's fair to dock a guy because he played with a team that's really good, but like we are splitting hairs multiple times as we try and figure this out. Pat Cavanaugh, I think, was my fourth guy here. If I got to do four first teamers, it would be him because I think his play has become that Notre Dame team's identity. The whole team is kind of shaped by his toughness, by the tone that he sets. So I really think he's been great this year. And TJ Malone, I think, has been great as well. I think if, you know, Penn State is obviously out, but TJ Malone was a guy who before the season I was ready to see a really special year from, and I think he played really well. I probably expected more from him than he actually gave, but I set the bar remarkably high in my eyes. But he had a special year. He certainly had a special year. The second team midfield, the final ballot was Jake Stevens, Andrew McAdory, and Devin McClain. My vote here is Mikey Weishaar, Andrew McAdory, and Alex Verdaro. So I have Weishaar second team. He is first team. I flopped him and Stevens, basically. I think Weishaar had a great year, and I think, if memory serves, he's an underclassman. He's going to come in the next season with the billing of being one of, if not the best midfielders in America. It will be warranted. As we kind of talked about Stevens, I give him the edge because he just impacts the game in more ways than Weishaar does. McAdory might be on this midfielder portion of the ballot. This might be the last time. I have a feeling he will play plenty of attack next year at Duke, and that's going to be where he's going to be in the mix. So I thought they would benefit from him being at attack more this year. Verdaro, I have him second team. On the final ballot, he came in third team. I thought he was better than that this year. With Bundy at attack, Verdaro really became the alpha through the midfield. I think he also just got drafted. He's a pro. But I really like his game, particularly as a Dodger. He's an explosive player, and I felt like he was not. There aren't that many midfielders better than him with his skills. So, face off. The final ballot was Justin Wheatfeldt. That was also my vote. I think he's a fairly easy second teamer. His second half, I think he was critical to Michigan's run through the tournament and everything. So. You kind of look in the way guys started making their case for these teams in the second half and in conference tournament play. He's a guy who certainly elevated himself in those games. And Michigan's success, I think also, like their team success, vaults him up the ballot when you look at everything that he was able to do for them. Short stick D. Mitty. My ballot for the second teamers was Grant Hawes and Dylan Hess. Final ballot went to Grant Hawes and Chase Yeager. I gave Hess a bit of an edge over Yeager. I thought Yeager probably had a better second half of the season of the two. I thought Hess had a better body of work for the entire season. So, I guess close, but I think Yeager was impactful this year as a two-way midfielder. I think Grant Hawes is first team good, but he just gets pushed out by those other two. LSM, the final second teamer was Steven Zupicic. My vote was Will Donovan. LSM's rough. You get one spot. One spot per team. It's like goalie, but it's rough, man. There's a lot of good LSMs. That first teamer spot for LSM also is what's going to Pisano. So I thought Will Donovan took a leap this year. I thought he was great last year. I thought he really took a leap this year. The Notre Dame LSM spot maybe does not get as much hype as it deserves. When we watch the Irish, a lot of people, you're tuning in to see the Kavanaughs and the offense cook. You're tuning in to see Eneman and Net. Donovan was one of the best in America this year. No doubt. No doubt. I considered Zupicic here too, but it was at the draft. It was funny. Coach Stagnetta said Villanova just seems to make polls. They just build polls there. And that's definitely a fair assessment of Villanova's program and some of the polls that have come out. So Zupicic is the latest. He had a great year from a cause turnover and ground ball standpoint. I know those are the sexy stats. I thought Donovan was the better player though. Defense second team. The final ballot here is Kenny Brower, Cole Kastner, and Billy Dwan. My vote here was Kenny Brower, AJ Pilot, and Scott Smith. Kenny Brower's first team good. It's just a tough year for that position too. As is Pilot, I thought. But Pilot, I think, doesn't show up on this thing until the third team. The final ballot, Pilot was a third teamer. I thought he was a first teamer at midseason. I didn't think he fell off very much in the second half. So I was surprised to see him drop as much as he did. Scott Smith, this is where I kind of thought he belonged. It was hard here because Kenny Brower had to be like my fourth defenseman, basically. He's pushing to be first team. He's definitely second team. I considered Pilot to be a similar caliber player, definitely a second team guy. And Scott Smith certainly had a high team or All-American kind of season for Hopkins. But I was trying to get Billy Dwan as high on the list as I could because he was so good this year. He made a serious star turn. Like, he absolutely blew up this year. But I couldn't get him ahead of some of these other guys. So like, spoiler alert, I have him third team, I think, but it's a good group. And he's going to come in the next season again. Is when you get to the preseason All-American kind of guys, he's probably going to be a preseason first team All-American kind of guy. He's going to, the bar is going to be very high for him next year. Goalie second team, the winner was Emmett Carroll. My vote was Emmett Carroll. I thought second best goalie in the country was a very easy conversation. It was clearly Emmett Carroll. If not for Liam Edelman, he's the best goalie in the country, and I don't think it's all that close. I thought he was, again, you talk about guys who were just so valuable to their team. Penn played these close, low-scoring games all year where they just leaned on Carroll and Lavelle to keep the other team from scoring and play a grinded-out kind of game as their offense got comfortable to life without Sam Hanley this year. And they picked things up. The offense got comfortable as the year went on, but the defense was their identity for a while. And Carroll is a key part of that. So he was my second-team goalie. Third-teamers, I mean, this is, I guess, the portion of this where you start being like, I better hear my guy's name pretty soon here, Arastia, or I'm going to send you a mean DM. But if not, I'm sorry, I guess. The final ballot for third-team attack, Joey Spallina, Sam King, Chris Kavanaugh. I have the same three. Sam King, Chris Kavanaugh, Joey Spallina. I know it's – Chris Kavanaugh is a teamer. It's almost crazy that he kind of plays in his brother's shadow a little bit for how good he was this year. Everybody's turning on and talking Pat Cav. Everyone's talking Pat Cav at the draft, all this, all that. Chris Kavanaugh had an awesome year. He was really good, as did Sam King. Maybe people weren't tuning into enough Harvard games, but he, in terms of points per game and production this year, was one of the best kind of, I think, you saw anywhere in America. He tore up some really good defenders in the Ivy League. He had great outings against great teams. He is back again next year and will be one of the best attackmen in the country. He will probably be the kind of guy who's like a high PLL draft pick. So I thought he had a great year. And look, Joey had the production's undeniable. I know people are always like, oh, he doesn't do it against ACC teams. He didn't score against Duke or whatever. Like, look, man, if his team's winning 18-10 or whatever, or his team's putting up 20 goals, it is the sign of a good player to be like, I'm not going to wreck the fact that the offense is cooking. If they score 18 goals and they win the game and he has 2 points, that doesn't mean he's not a productive player. It's the dumbest thing in the world to me. Anyway, Spallina is the best offensive player on that Syracuse team, and that says a lot when you look at their personnel and how many guys. Look at the guys who aren't even able to get on the field there that are so good. That team's bending over backwards to try and get Trey Deer minutes. He's one of the most talented, you know, underclassmen in the country, and they can't get him on the field because everybody is so good. And Joey Spallina is the best player on that team. He's the best offensive player on that team. I don't think it's particularly difficult to make Joey Spallina a teamer. I don't want to hear the, he doesn't do it. He racks it up against bad teams. So does everybody else. It only seems to people. That people like to knock it when Joey does it, though. I don't know. I don't get that part of things. Midfield, the final ballot was Alex Verdaro, Griffin Schutz, and Eric Dobson. My third-team midfield was Devin McClain, Eric Dobson, and Matt Collison. McClain was a second-teamer in the final ballot. I thought he really came on in the second half. That Notre Dame offense, man, it's all such tough matchups, and it's tough to pick the midfielders out of there. I really didn't want to leave Jordan Faison off of this list. I think he's going to be, I believe he finished honorable mention, but he really is a talented Dodger and player. Sometimes guys get left off because they're underclassmen and they're going to have their chance later. But I had a hard time keeping Faison off, but McClain and Dobson were both great. Dobson, they say it every time he plays now, but the numbers might not be there. But if you watch Notre Dame play, you can see how much he runs the offense from the midfield, how impactful he is from the midfield, as he draws a slide instantly when he dodges every single time. It's like an automatic unsettling of the defense. And then he moves the ball to the Kavanaughs and to the attack, and things just kind of take off swimmingly from there. But Dobson is critical for that all to work. And it doesn't show up in the stat sheet, but man, is he important. So I had Dobson third team, and I had Matt Collison third team. I thought a lot of games for Hopkins where they needed, obviously he had like the OT game winners, but when they needed to find something from their midfield, as talented as that team is, the guy they want to go to is Collison. He's the biggest physical matchup problem they have. He is an exceptional dodger and shooter. I thought he really took another step this year, and it's hard for me to keep him off the third team. So the guy that pushes out from the final ballot for me is Schutz, who I think is fine. I'm probably a little lower on Schutz than other people. I don't consider Schutz to be this like world-beating midfielder. In terms of like physical dodge imposing presences, guys who were just going to use their body to run through people, which is just like the kind of player that Schutz really is, I would take Collison ahead of him as the same kind of player to put his shoulder into somebody and get where he wants to go. I'd take Collison right now. So that was my kind of thinking there for the third team in the midfield. Third team face-off, the final teamer, the winner was Alex Stathakis. My vote was also Stathakis. We'll talk more about this in a second. We'll kind of skip the discussion of the face-off spot here on the third team in a second. Short stick D-middies, the final ballot was Dylan Hess and Brett Martin. My vote was Chase Yeager, and I gave it to Casey Wilson. So I had Hess as a second teamer and Yeager as a third teamer, so those were flip-flopped from the final ballot. And I think Casey Wilson is just really good, man. I think he finished honorable mention, but third teamer for me. That Denver defense, having a short stick like him, who's another one of these guys where you can trust him to not get beat, and he's so good going defense to offense. I think he's going to be a two-league pro, and he's got another year left. So I had him ahead of Brett Martin. Wasn't easy, but I had him ahead of Brett Martin for short stick D-Middy third teamers. LSM, the final ballot, this is where Will Donovan showed up, and this is where I had Zupacic. So I flip-flopped those two. We kind of already talked about them, so we don't have to do it again. Defense, the final ballot was Colby Barres, Sean Light, AJ Pilot, and Mason Woodward for third team. There are four names there because the way voting works is you get points based on where you get voted to. And if there is a tie, then they put both guys on. So these two of these guys must have been tied in votes and point values. So the final third team is Colby Barres, Sean Light, AJ Pilot, and Mason Woodward. My third team is Billy Dwan, Mason Woodward, and Colin Molshine. So the two guys who I don't have on here are Barres and Sean Light, which was not easy. I think Sean Light I said it on social. I'm on record here. I thought he should have been the ACC Freshman of the Year. I thought he was he's a top two or three defenseman, I think, in the ACC right now. He's as a freshman. He's that good, man. And it's funny, when we were at the draft at ESPN, the PLL draft at ESPN last Tuesday, you know, we were talking greatest draft and that kind of language and the way you describe drafts and all that. And we were talking about how last year's draft was like the best defensive draft ever. And we were saying, man, mark your calendar for 4 years from now, because it's going to be the best defensive draft ever again. Because it's going to be Sean Light and Quentin Kilrain and Ty Banks and AJ Marsh, and like the freshman class of defenders in America right now is off the charts good. Off the charts good. And I think Light is, over the course of the year, outplayed the others, and that puts him in a very elite class. So this is where I talked about Billy Dwan. I think Colin Molshine's second half was off the charts good. He locked up Matt Brandau twice. He was a critical piece to that Princeton run because he was erasing people. And I thought he played his way into being a teamer in the second half of the year. I have been a Mason Woodward fan since the year started. I probably overrate Mason Woodward, but here I got him exactly where the ballot got him, on the third team. He made a bunch of special plays and his numbers were good. Marquette played a lot of zone, which it does not always going to translate to the defender putting out a bunch of highlights and great play on tape as an individual, but it's just the nature of the scheme they played. But I cannot wait to see him in the pros, I'll tell you that. Third team goalie, the final ballot was Jack Frassian. My vote here went to Will Mark. I thought Mark had a better year. Frassian had a great second half. He does this. Like last year he did it too, but you know, he got crazy hot in the second half and was a major key to Penn State's run. He was great for Penn State, you know, down the stretch in the season and everything, but over the course of the year, I tried to not be a recency bias guy. Over the course of the year, I thought Will Mark had the better season. Honorable mentions. I don't think we want to go through every single honorable mention here. There are just a couple of notes, though, I did want to make. Machado Rodriguez. As we talked about third team faceoff, it was a place where I thought about Machado Rodriguez, Yale's faceoff specialist. He's just spent the second half of the year hurt. I had him as a second teamer and the midseason All-Americans, and I think he would still be there if he doesn't get hurt. He was basically at or near the top of the chart in every meaningful faceoff stat. The injury and missing the second half, so much of the second half, not the whole thing, but so much of the second half, really drops him out. So I thought Machado Rodriguez was a teamer or having a teamer caliber season before his injury. And I hope he gets back healthy for Yale. I think not having room for guys in the ballot, for guys like Angelus, Michael Long, attack is just such a hard spot to find space for. You can get six names into the honorable mentions at attack and still be saying about guys, he's good enough to be a teamer. He really is. Attack is just, we say it every year about it, like, oh, this year's attack is so good. Every year's attack is so good. Every year, the attack is so good. It's a competitive spot. It's just how it is. I thought, you know, Ben Ware at UVA wasn't even honorable mention. I thought that was a little surprising. LSM, like we said, tough spot. There are not a whole lot of slots on the ballot to vote for LSMs. So it's tough to get the votes you need, I guess. But I thought Ware was one of the best in America at ground balls for sure, going end to end, like that kind of play. I thought he had a great year. I thought he would be rewarded and be an honorable mention guy, but I don't think I saw, maybe I'm just wrong here, but I don't think I saw his name anywhere on the final list. So I thought Ben Ware deserved a little more recognition. I thought he earned it. I had Bars and Light as honorable mention kind of guys. I think Light is, like I said, the head of the freshman class. That's one of the best in a really long time. Bars, obviously, I think played his way onto this list this year. Nobody had him there at the start of the season. I don't think anybody even had him there at midseason. But Towson's play this year, and the play of their defense, which I know they lost to Cuse, and Cuse put up a ton of goals, but the way Towson plays defense is fun, man. If you played defense growing up, it's the kind of defense you would want to play in. Like, you know, there's a two-man game behind the goal, and not only do they double the ball carrier through the pick, but the goalie steps out to guard the picker, so it becomes like three defenders on two offensive players, and they can double aggressively. Like, that kind of scheme is so fun. You don't see a lot of it. So I love the way they play defense. I really enjoyed watching Towson play this year. And I'm happy for Colby Bars getting a third team spot and getting drafted, because he really was the key part of that defense, and he's a great player. If you have big thoughts, of course, let's do it, man. These lists are meant to be discussed. It's part of the fun. It's part of being a fan, being a media member, being whatever it is you are for lacrosse. It's good for the game to have this many good players that we can argue about who's the best. And we can argue about this guy's too high, this guy's too low, I can't believe you slept on, I can't believe you overrated. That kind of stuff is good for the game, as long as you keep it civil. Come on. We can at least manage that, right? So that's the All-Americans. Last topic I want to touch on today here, just a quick thing about it, but the PLL held a street lacrosse event in New York City on Saturday. They did this, I believe it was down on the Lower East Side, Kevin Durant courts. I guess I would just say this about the street lacrosse thing. The mission of it, the premise of street lacrosse, I am a huge fan of. I love it. I love the idea of, hey, bring yourself and a stick to this place, and we'll play. We'll invent goals out of something. We'll figure it out. It's improvisational. It's easy to access. It's fun. It's great for a newcomer. It's so important, and that's great. I love the idea of having Kevin Durant there. I'm not sure if he was there this year. He was there last year. I don't know if he was there this year. You know, and Jeffrey Wright, you know, being there, who's a major celebrity with lacrosse ties, who's passionate about the game. All that kind of stuff is awesome for visibility. I love all that. My thing about the street lacrosse thing is I haven't been to it, and I feel like even though there's like a zillion clips out there, I feel like I still haven't seen it. Does that make sense? Like, after two of them and all the clips and all the video, I don't feel like I've experienced what the mission of the event is meant to be. I tried to go to this year's, I will say. I tried to go. I got the PLL said, unfortunately, no. It sounds like it's the kind of thing where there is very limited space on these courts or at these things. And, you know, I asked. They told me they were at capacity. I get it for this. I also asked, like, super late. I think I asked, like, 2 days ahead of time or a day ahead of time. Like, I gave them no notice. They have no capacity. They said no. I would have done the same thing to me. But when I watch the clips that get posted, it feels like I'm just watching the showboating kind of stuff. Like, if you remember the And One mixtapes on TV, I'm dating myself so hard. God, I hope somebody remembers these. And One mixtapes in basketball, it was a show. I think it was on, like, MTV. I don't know. It might have been an ESPN show. But it was these guys, these streetball basketball players who would go to gyms and play. But all it was like, throwing the ball off the wall and, like, putting it through the other guy's legs and this and that. And it was, like, that was the spectacle of it. So when I watched, like, the stuff that I see from these street lacrosse things, that's the kind of stuff I see, where it's, like, everything is just, like, look at the behind the backs and the around the world, blah, 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 blah. I don't get what that has to do with the ease of access of a pickup game. I thought the idea was this is easy to do and play and just play lacrosse. Is it fun to see guys do this stuff? Sure. Would I rather see interaction and play with newcomers to the game, something that's completely central to what this event is supposed to be about? I think yes, right? Like, I can see the superstars going off the backboard and BTBs and all this. I've seen it. I get it. It does nothing for me. I hope they keep doing street lacrosse because I love the central mission. I love this idea that they have. But again, after two events, I feel like I haven't seen it. Even with all the content, I feel like I haven't seen it. I've just seen the mixtapes. I haven't seen the mission. Just the mixtapes at this point. I want to see the mission too. I don't know. That'll probably get me a reply from somebody. We'll see. Anyway, that'll be it for today. We will have a weekend preview show for the quarterfinals on Friday. As I said, I'll be at Hofstra. I hope to see you there. You know what's on the horizon here? All four ACC teams are favored going into the weekend. We could be having an all ACC Final Four if it goes all chalk the whole way through. Can you imagine how insufferable some of the folks in lacrosse Twitter will be if we get all ACC teams? Ugh. Deliver us, please. Thank you again for coming back and for sticking around with me. And we will see you next time.